We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Welcome, educators. Thank you so much for joining our EdWebinar on teaching current events in our interconnected world. My name is Rania Salem-Manganero, and I am coming to you from CFR Education at the Council on Foreign Relations. We're really excited to get started with you. Now, today's webinar is sponsored by CFR Education from the Council on Foreign Relations. The Council on Foreign Relations is an independent, nonpartisan membership organization, think tank, and publisher focused on foreign policy. And CFR Education leverages that knowledge from the Council on Foreign Relations experts to make complex global affairs and foreign policy issues accessible for middle school, high school, and higher education students and educators through free open educational resources. Committed to supporting educators as they take on this crucial work, CFR Education offers 2 ambassador programs, professional development activities, and curated teaching resources, including lesson plans, reading guides, and editable presentations. And if you would like to receive those free teaching and learning resources straight to your inbox, follow the QR code you can see on the screen right now, or you might find a link in the chat to our CFR Education newsletter. All right, now enough about CFR Education. Let's get you introduced to our speakers today. Now, first, I'd like to introduce Lois McMillan. Lois teaches world history, American history, and AP government at Grants Pass High School in Oregon. She's been teaching for over 30 years and at various levels. Charlie Hopkins is the Director of Teaching and Learning at the Council on Foreign Relations and is also a teacher who has taught middle and high school social studies in the United States and abroad. So thank you so much for coming, and I am going to pass it off to my colleague, Charlie.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Rania, and thank you everybody who's here with us today. So excited that you're joining us. So we wanted to start off our conversation by talking a little bit about this interconnected world and what we think of when we think about why teach global civics through current events. CFR Education, what we see ourselves doing is building students' global literacy. What that means for us is building those knowledge, skills, and perspective that are necessary for our students to succeed in today's global world, an increasingly global world. The reason why we do this is because there really is a global literacy gap. A few years ago, CFR got together with the National Geographic Society. We surveyed a bunch of college-age students in the United States, gave them a basic global literacy test, and only 29% of them could pass it. And this is, we set a passing grade at like a D+. Like, this is, not a stringent test. An example of a question on the screen: a lot of folks just did not know how you declare war in the United States, which, pretty basic thing to know. At the same time, we asked them about what they were interested in, what they thought was important to know about global civics. And the number one thing that people said they were interested in learning about was current world events. So here we are today.
Charlie, one of my buddies that's on a Fulbright exchange in Norway, what he saw in terms of global physics with his students that he's working with in Norway, he's originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but he's on assignment for the year. And what he's seeing with Norway students is their global civic awareness is much higher than the students he's been with for 20, 25 years. And so when he's coming back to the States, he's going to change that. And hopefully this presentation helps people get there our educators in our community here in the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that, Lois. So why is global literacy important? It meets our students' needs. Absolutely. There are far worse reasons to do things in school than that. It prepares students for our globalized world. We know our students are going to grow up to be citizens, voters, community members, future leaders. We want to equip them to fill those roles well. It's great preparation for college and careers. Colleges are increasingly seeking global knowledge, offering global experiences, and many, many careers end up having a global component to them, either the people they're doing business with or the supply chain that they're a part of or the research and writing and thinking they have to do. You know, and to Lois's point about, you know, comparing to other countries, it's an important part of building a stronger, more secure, more innovative nation is building global literacy among our young people. So thinking about what do we mean when we mean current events, how might you think about this? We want to offer you a couple of questions, more to shape your own thinking than necessarily something you want to present to your students. But when you're going out searching for current events, I think two questions to think about. Just what are the major issues that are affecting your students every day? Chances are, whatever you come up with as the answer for that, you know, in a given week, there's going to be a global aspect to that major issue. Another way to think about this, we think about this a lot as we're developing resources at CFR Education. How does what happens abroad affect us here in the United States? And vice versa, how do the things that are happening here in the United States affect other countries abroad? So that gets us to, you know, a bunch of different possibilities. Globalization, trade, and other global economic forces are absolutely a category of current events. We've mentioned before, I think our classics are wars, conflicts, and crises. Goodness knows we have a few of those to talk about right now. I would say really any global climate or environmental issue. Really all climate environmental issues are global. We've got only one planet, and carbon being added or not added to the atmosphere anywhere in the world. It's the same atmosphere that we're working on. Issues related to, yeah, go ahead.
Charlie, I'm kind of wondering, I love this list that you put together.
Yeah.
I'd love to see in the chat, and I'm watching the chat, which are the out of your five bullets, what teachers think that is the number one of the bullets that we have in front of us. When you showed me this earlier, I would have said wars, conflicts, and crises, but a couple of years ago, it would have been different. With the recent effects. When you were in the classroom, Charlie, which one or two would your students have been interested in?
I think when there was a conflict of some kind, that absolutely jumped to the tops of people's minds. But I think also, you know, some of these technology questions, you know, the thing about the internet is it is global. You know, something put on the internet anywhere in the world is accessible everywhere. Cyber crime is almost always global. What about you, Lois? Yeah.
I'm going to have to, I think our science department in my school is doing a really good job with global climate. And so that's been a real big, outside of the wars, conflicts, and crisis, especially with the recently has been happening the last couple of months. But the global climate, that is a big piece in my school right now.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I'm not surprised. So those are some examples. Those are some reasons why we want to talk about current events and global literacy. Some examples of current events you might think about. So we wanted to shift now to talk a little bit. Well, how do we actually make this happen in our classrooms for our students? So, you know, as mentioned, you know, I've spent a decade in the classroom. I've also been really privileged in my role at CFR Education to work with and talk to a lot of teachers across the country and around the world who are doing different kinds of things to build their students' global literacy. You know, and often that involves incorporating current events in one way or another. So some of this also is sharing, you know, ideas that they've had and things that we've learned over the years of collaboration. The first thing I want to mention is think about building a routine. Formulaic is not a four-letter word. This is actually stolen from the title of one of my favorite articles about teaching writing, but I think it really applies to many, many aspects of teaching. Structure can be so, so valuable for students and for you as a teacher. And what I mean by that here is think about doing the same thing, but swapping out the content each time. Right? Maybe you're going to talk about current events on a regular basis in your classroom, and every time you do it, you've got an assignment where you write a paragraph and the directions for what that paragraph looks like and what it has to accomplish are exactly the same. It's just one week it's about an economic issue, and the next week it's about a war, and the week after that it's about a human rights issue. Right? So the same activity, the students are getting used to writing a paragraph or, you know, and fulfilling certain expectations that you've got in your classroom, and just swapping in different content. Likewise, it doesn't have to be.
Charlie, I had not heard until you gave me this information on the New York Times Learning Network. I think I have not seen that. And I think that's a wonderful resource. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
That's
they
great.
Do a great job. They put out an activity or a lesson plan every weekday about a different news issue. So you could think about, as you're sort of building your routine, it could be about the activity you do with your kids, a paragraph, a presentation, a debate. It might also be that you've got a particular source of resources that you want to draw on. Maybe it's those New York Times activities and your kids are going to read something from the New York Times on a regular basis and you're going to use that activity. It may also be, you know, some of the things we have at CFR Education, a collection of mini simulations. Students pretend to be the president and have to deal with real life issues. Could be videos and readings from World 101 that we have. And there are lots of other resources out there as well. But sometimes just having that consistency can really help out. The reason why, it saves you time in the long run. You got to be patient at first. You got to build that expectation. The first couple of times they do that paragraph or they navigate that New York Times website, they're going to need some help. They're going to have questions. But it will pay off as the year goes on. You spend less time explaining what we're doing, and you spend more time talking about the details of the content or the skills that you're working on. It also means you can pick a particular habit of mind or skill, maybe something you've decided you need to focus on that semester or that year, and really hone in on it by choosing your activity and just doing it over and over again. Also, that routine means that students can anticipate that current events, you know, your current events day or your current events, you know, segment is coming up. And sometimes it's going to bring a little different energy from your regular class. And sometimes it's a great thing for them to anticipate.
I really, going back to that last slide, I really love the routine I've added in using the CFR website, especially with current events. It does bring a tremendous energy. The structure and routine that I put in my AP government class with the lens of what is our other governments around the world has really added. I know we have a couple of AP teachers that are here today, and that structure, the routine of bringing that in, really enlightens what kind of government we have and how we respond to different problems. Mm. I just really love this routine that you're talking about, and I love your ideas here. That you're mining the habits and minds and skills. I just love this. But the energy that's brought to the classroom is so important.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the hardest thing to sort of quantify, but you sort of know it when it's there. Mm-hmm. And, that routine allows you to expect it. And, sometimes it helps. Sometimes it would help me as well if I know something's coming and I can gear up for it in a different way.
Well, and just one more thing. What's wonderful is if you give them choice, especially in that CFR website, they're going to where their interests are too. And what's been really wonderful is when I've been doing it on my AP Gov classroom, I'm learning about the kids and their background. One of my students looked up Vietnam. And what I thought was interesting is why did you go towards that? And he's like, my family's from there. I had no idea. So it's another way also to get to know our students.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So we talked about routine. I think paired with that also is having a schedule. I know I was always a better teacher when I planned ahead. I also know I never had as much time as I wanted to do that planning. And if you build yourself a schedule, you help make sure it happens, help students get used to the routine. It also pushes you to not wait for the world to be on fire to talk about that current event. You tell yourself, I'm going to do this, let's say every 2 weeks, and there's a week where there's not a war going on, there's not a crisis on the front page, that can be a good moment to go and find, maybe a deeper long-range issue, maybe something that you wouldn't have thought of at first and have to do, pull in something that's a little bit different. But having some kind of a pattern and this could range from maybe just once a semester, right? You're going to do it twice. That's your schedule, your routine. You do it once in the fall, you learn from it. You do it better in the spring, or the kids, kids are more used to it in the spring. Maybe it's tied to when your units change over. Maybe it's tied to, just the end of the week or something like that. And remember, it doesn't have to be a full period. It certainly could. You could do a full period. But if you're doing a pretty frequent one, this could be, your bell ringer. This could be a 15-minute segment of a class, something like that, if that's what works well for you.
Well, and I think we discussed this earlier, but the first time I did it with my class, it took the whole period. But then we fit in a structure, like you said earlier, and now it takes 10 to 15 minutes. But the amount of energy it brings the classroom, I just can't say enough about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So having a schedule, and then as Lois said a minute ago, offering student choice. You're gonna hear both of us talk a bit about choice today. Choice is great for a variety of reasons. As with any time you bring student choice into the classroom, it gives students a sense of ownership over their learning. And then as Lois said, it brings variety. You might not have thought of certain issues, but your students have interests. And so if it's not just you making choices, it's the class altogether making choices, you're gonna end up with a wider range of topics. There's a lot of different ways to approach how you give choice. You could make it totally open-ended. Go read the newspaper and pick an article that's interesting to you. Very, very broad prompt. It could be much more closed-ended. Hey, here are 5 mini simulations. Pick which one is most interesting to you from this list. You could give that choice to the debate. Hey, guys, come up with a debate prompt. Or it could be, in the activity. Hey, here's your topic for this week, but it's up to you whether you want to write a paragraph or whether you want to record a short video about what you think about it. So you can go a couple different ways. These are all good ways to bring in student choice while also meeting the goals that you need to hit in your instruction. The last thing we want to talk about is be ready for the big one. And Lois cringes. Lois is on the West Coast. Big one, talking about the big one sort of brings up ideas of massive earthquakes. But I would say we've had some earthquakes, metaphorically in the world in our time teaching. I know for me, it was going to the classroom the morning after the 2016 election was decided. And I had students who had a wide variety of feelings about that and a lot of questions. I remember also my very first year of teaching, my department chair told us all about going into his European history course the morning after the Berlin Wall fell, and talking to his European history students, about, everything he'd been planning to talk about didn't quite apply in the same way anymore. We can't always predict these things, but we can prepare for them. Lean into that routine that you've been building. If you've gotten your students used to reading an article and writing a paragraph about it, do that. Provide some comfort, means that you can get right into the issue and not spend time designing and explaining an activity. My second piece of advice for you is find an introductory article as a starting point. You may have spent all night watching CNN. A lot of your students may have spent all night watching CNN, depending on what the issue is. But it may not be the case that everybody did. And so you want everybody to get up to sort of that same starting level of understanding so that they can engage in whatever activity you have in mind. Even more importantly, you probably got some students who think they understand what happened the day before and don't actually. They've either misunderstood or they've missed a key point. This is especially true as we know that our students are more and more getting their information from places like social media and less from places like CNN. Go ahead.
I was going to say the big one that just really flew in to my experience in the 30 years I've been in the classroom is 9/11 and the misinformation that was out on those first couple of days. And we're looking furiously of who are the players. The CFR website is absolutely tremendous in building up that background, especially with the recent conflict in the Middle East. That has been a goldmine for my students because I really, in their lives, that's a big one right now.
Yeah. And I think, and thank you for saying that. We're not paying Lois to say these nice things about CFR. but I think do think ahead about what news sources you're going to rely on. You may not know what the issue is, but you know what kinds of places you can look. Is it a place like CFR, the New York Times, or are your students going to do better with a video? Which videos work for them? I want to put in a plug for the network news organizations. ABC, NBC, CBS News put together a very good, balanced, introductory 5-minute piece about breaking news very quickly. And they can be, a great resource for this kind of, morning after we want to talk about something. So think about what works for your students' reading level, their attention span, the length of time you've got to work with. Have those thoughts in the back of your mind. Also, you know what topics are sort of the third rail in your district, in your classroom. Think ahead. What are the things that topics that come up, do I need to just sort of provide resources and stand back, versus ones where maybe you can be a little bit more active and explain things and talk about them. And the last thing I'll say is that as you think about, saying some things on your own, does your school have posters about respect in all the hallways, or is compassion part of your motto? What are sort of those fundamental values that your school talks about? I think they can be really good starting places if you're talking to students about an issue. Is this news story about someone who's not being as respectful of others as we might hope? Start from that solid grounding that the students are really familiar, hearing your principal talk about, hearing student leaders talk about. That can be a great way to frame the beginning of that conversation. The last thing we'll say about sort of that big one is Lois and I both, as we were preparing this, we're talking about really our responsibility when these, breaking news, big issues come up. Because the reality is, students are going to talk about big news, and they're going to do it either with us or without us as teachers. And my thinking is, wouldn't you rather that we as educators be some part of that conversation? Doesn't mean you have to direct the conversation and control the conversation, but there are roles we can play. We can help students find good resources or present them with good resources. We can help them maybe apply a certain habit of mind that's going to shape the conversation in a good way. We can provide a model of civil discourse in our classroom. We can simply signal that you're engaged with this issue and that you're a trusted adult. So if an individual student or a small group of students need to come see you individually, you're signaling that you're there for that. So I hope this is helpful. Here's sort of some big pictures, some best practices we can think about. And I'm going to hand things back over to Rania now before we move on to the second part of our presentation.
Thank you so much, Charlie. I always feel like I learn so much when I hear you talking about current events. And I wanted to thank you all. The chat is bustling and there's lots of great questions and best practices and tips and tricks. So I'm learning a lot. I thought we'd address just two questions before we jump in and hear some more from Lois. So one of them is from Scott. And Scott asks, how do you address topics that are considered to be hot button issues?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've had a couple of those recently, haven't we? I think this is a tricky question because a lot of it does depend on your district and the age of your kids. And frankly, is it the beginning of the year or the end of the year? And how well do you and your kids know each other? I would point you right back to the slide that we've still got on the screen here. Do what you can, right? Maybe you feel like, hey, in the context of my district or my classroom, I really shouldn't say anything about what I think about the war in Gaza. Totally understand that. What could you do, though? You could say, hey, I've been watching the news. There's a lot going on. If you have questions, feel free to see me at lunch, if you're looking for resources. Maybe that's a thing you feel comfortable saying. Maybe you say, hey, remember to read multiple sources. If that's something you've been working on in your classroom and media literacy, make sure you're looking at a variety of sources and reliable sources. And, perhaps you've got a couple examples, or maybe you don't want to give examples, but you can just remind folks of sort of that best practice that you're probably talking about if you're teaching history or anything that involves with current events. Lois, how would you think about this?
I really, there was a comment in the chat that really is profound, and I love that Jen said it, that research shows that we tend to lean away from the statements that we do not agree with. And I think it's our, as in educators, it is our moral responsibility to take on these things that are complex. I think that we lean into it. We absolutely. One of the things we put together, a group of teachers, we put about 15 of us brought together after Black Lives Matter, is our responsibility to teach history and put it so that we understand the context of the present. and what are we teaching and opening up their lives. It is our responsibility. And I want that future generation, when they're living 10 years and they've been out of my classroom and they're still in my community, they remember what we talked about when the big one came. And going back to that example on 9/11, I ran into a parent, and it was so long ago. And she remembers, she mentioned that day when we handled that situation. So I just think we have to do it, and we have to lean into it, even if research says that we tend to do the opposite. So thank you so much, Jen, for putting that in, because it hits right where we're going. And CFR, the website, has been so instructive to me. So as an educator.
Thank you, Lois. And thank you for that question. I'm just going to have one more here for Charlie in particular from Rwanda. Does CFR have resources for middle school? So does CFR Education have resources for middle school? And I would just add, if so, what are they? Can I share them?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one that I'll point you straight to, I hope many of you are familiar with iCivics. They do terrific work in a wide variety of areas of civics. Although, you know, I think they're best known, their first line of business was doing educational video games. And we, about 2 years ago, worked with them and worked together on a game called Convene the Council. Students pretend to be the president. They have cartoon characters that pop up as their advisors. They get sort of imaginary scenarios based on real issues. You as teachers can probably figure out what we're really talking about, but we use pretend country names. And they get to try it out and try to be the president and address these issues. That is very much in the wheelhouse for middle school students. Some of our other resources, I would say, depends on your middle schooler. I think videos, you can certainly pull out sort of individual infographics and graphs to discuss. Depending on your middle schoolers, the readings may or may not be, in the range, where they need maybe a little bit more scaffolding, or maybe you want to wait till they're a little bit older for those. But yeah, Convene the Council, which I'm sure Rania either has just or is about to drop a link to in the chat.
Yes, I shared it in the chat. And for those who have more, burning questions, please throw them in the Q&A part of your screen, because now we're going to hear from Lois, and then we'll have a sufficient amount of time to address all of those questions. So please keep them coming. And now I'm going to pass it off to Lois.
Well, thank you so much, Rania. I'm going to be talking about specifically examples that I used from the classroom from last spring to this fall, and how I taught current events using our mini simulations at CFR Education. This is mine and only mine. I just made it up because this is what I've been trying to do the last few years, especially coming out of the pandemic, is I call it the three C's. So there's no research here, just what I want to do in the classroom. First of all, I really want to foster curiosity in the classroom. When they're coming in, I want them to be curious about the past. I'm a history teacher, so I want them asking questions about the past. And you guys all know, you run into people in your community saying, I hated history when I was in high school, but now I love it. So I really want the love to start when I have them in the classroom. So that curiosity, I want them to be really curious about the world around them. The second one is collaboration. Collaboration, I do in the classroom from day one. I talk about that in our new world. One of the skills we have to have is working together, that solutions come, taking all the minds together, four minds are better than one. And that I read someplace, this might not be true, but 95% of people that get fired not because they're not hard workers or smart, it's because they can't get along with others. So I'm teaching them skills in the classroom about collaboration. And then in the last decade, I brought in choice. I have choice all the time. For when I do things within my curriculum, we're all guided by state standards and those kind of stuff. But within those standards, we still have a great deal of choice. But I really believe in choice going back to the student, not just me. And just to clarify on curiosity, I'm not talking about curiosity in terms of pedagogy. I'm talking about real curiosity within the person. I don't think it's I can test it going out of the classroom. I'm talking about just the person, not the pedagogy. Right now, I read an article this weekend about the discussion between the traditional approach of teaching content and inquiry approach and how the two sides are kind of going at it and what we trust as evidence. That's not what I'm talking about with curiosity. Last spring, I launched in a very structured way, because I'm pretty old school. I'm pretty structured within the classroom. And this TikTok mini simulation off of the CFR education, should the United States ban TikTok to preserve national security? I was very structured in how I approach it. I'm going to show you that in a minute. But I also had in place by the spring, working with my students for almost a whole year, the collaboration piece. And I was going to put that to use for this simulation. I started off with every student being a member of the United Nations Security Council. They were really excited that they got this new appointment. One kid said, hey, I know what member of the permanent council I'm on. I said, I don't know if you're fine enough to be a whole country. We went back and forth. It was rather fun. But they already knew in the spring what the United Nations Security Council was, because I had already taught the end of World War II. I had taught the end of World War I, so they already knew this. And we really had fun with it. Then I divided it up from the whole class. This is the structure that I did. We read the overview of the mini simulation that is on the website. And we did this paragraph by paragraph as a class, and then we discussed it as we went. There's not really that many paragraphs in the overview, so it allowed for clarification. Do you understand this? What's going on? Then within each mini simulation, there's three policy options. So I read through them, and then I had the kids get up out of their chairs and move to three different areas of the three different options. So I got them moving. Then we moved into the part two, which was the small groups. And I had them in groups. Last spring, I had about 130 kids. So I usually have six to seven groups within the classroom. And they read the two of the attached extra resources, additional resources on TikTok and what the problems were. It was really fun to listen to their side talk. And I'll talk about how I approach reading in this regard, but all the different ways that they could do TikTok. The New York Times is really informative in that the kids were learning a lot. They were quite dismissive of the Economist article only because they said, these are the steps to banning TikTok. The kids said, okay, you try that, but we're going to get around it. That's what I thought was so funny, is that, hey, these adults can say they can do it that way. That maybe a legislator can do that or whatever. State of Montana was going to limit TikTok, which they saw as ridiculous. And that was ubiquitous through all the groups. So this dialogue that the additional resources really added to what we discussed. Then we went back to the whole group. The small group shared out using textual evidence from the article. So when my students take notes, they take exact quotes from the article. And then we got up and re-chose, did your mind change after you read the article and had the class, the small group discussion? So you saw movement around the room. They're like, I picked one first, but I think I'm going over here to three. And what I thought was really nice is within the small groups, what I really liked was they weren't all going to one option, that they were splitting up. Even they had debated it enough in class or in their small group that they changed their mind. And I've been doing this. I think it's a really nice tip. When we have class discussions at the end, I always ask, what students in here impressed you the most with what they brought to the table? I always do that. It raises the warmth in the room. Some kids are going to go out with like, somebody said this cool thing about me. And I always implement that. I did it at the middle school and I taught there for 18 years. And I still do it at the high school. It gets you going a long way. Yeah. And then go ahead.
Sorry. I really love how you're teaching about current events. That's your topic. But you've incorporated, you know, your skills practice with textual evidence. Some of your habits of mind of like be open to changing your mind and your values of like compliment each other and listen to each other and care about each other and hold each other up. And I really love how you've combined all of that. You know, it's the kinds of things I want to do when I grow up in my classroom.
Well, well, one of the hardest kid to teach, and everybody knows this, the hardest kid to teach is the quiet kid. He's sitting back, he's quiet, he can't say anything. And when he gets that compliment or she gets that compliment, they come out of their shell. And so by the end of the year, I know we all do this, we're monitoring who's getting the most compliments. And we want to share the wealth, share the love. So, and then at the end, I just pose, this is a quick write. My students, I'm very structured, Charlie, sorry, on quick writes. It's five paragraphs. Sorry, it's five sentences, not paragraphs. I think they freak out. Five sentences. You got a topic sentence, 1, 2, 3, tell me 3 reasons, using textual evidence that you wrote in your notebooks. And I'll talk about writing in the notebooks and why you chose it. And I really want textual evidence. And this is really successful as a quick write. They got it done. They're at this point in the year, and it was near the end of the year, they can quickly write. So coming into the new year, I had academic concerns that we all have with students. As you know, all of us have reading level concerns that we have students coming into our classroom. My average classroom is between 32 and 35 students in the classroom. And the reading levels range from grade 3 to 12th grade or college. So how do we address within the classroom and your concerns about reading levels that are so vast? I also address vocabulary right out of the gate. And I do this, and it worked really well when we did our mini simulations with CFR Education. But I'm in introducing how to approach vocabulary that you don't know. My favorite book as a kid was The Tale of Two Cities by Dickens. And you know his opening when he says the age of the phrase, the opening is these are the best times or the worst of times. But this is the epic or epoch, I think the British say it, the epic of belief, the epic of incredulity. And when I read that, I always start out with, hey, what's incredulity? And they all go, well, you know, some say, well, I know it, I just can't explain it. Well, if you can't explain it, you got to write it down and look it up. And what I really want in the future is kids putting that into their writing. So that expanding the vocabulary is so important. And then I think everybody will agree, coming out of the pandemic, I didn't see the discussion that I wanted to see, the rich discussion. So I'm trying those concerns and how to blossom the discussion. And then them asking further questions. One of the rules, first day in class, I say, hey, by the way, the smartest person in the room is not answering the questions, they're asking the questions. And I put a great deal of emphasis on asking questions. So with my 3 C's and using the mini simulations, I could take these academic concerns, blend it into the 3 C's that I'm doing, and then I can then approach a mini simulation and have a much more success. But initially, when I did it this fall, and I'm doing it in the first quarter of the year, choice was not on the table. I am very structured, and I had an idea of what I was going to do. And the first one, the mini, of course, I was going to stay with, are you a member of the United Nations Security Council? But in this case, the kids had not, I had not taught World War I, I had not taught World War II or the end of it. So I had to explain what the United Nations Security Council was. And the article that you have posted on the CFR website is really great to get to it. So I use that to help explain to my students. And then my choice out of, I think there's 23 or 21 mini simulations. My choice was the prisoner swap. That to me just looked great. I'm going back to my high school years when the Iranian hostage crisis is on. I'm thinking, well, and there was a recent 6 months ago, I think on NPR, there was a thing on whether Reagan kind of met with Iran during the Carter administration. If you remember, the hostages released right when he was being sworn into office. So there was some discussion there. And my bigger discussion is I have all three of my sons served in the military. One is still serving in the Navy. He's being transferred to Spain. And what happens if you are taken prisoner? This Paul Whelan situation is very, very scary to me. And so I was talking with my sons. And of course, I'm a basketball fan. So I really like Brittany Griner. So this was my choice. But I realized it was all about what I liked. And I realized I really need to open up the choice. So this is how I did it. I had the students in small groups again, because I do a lot of small groups. And as a whole group, we reviewed the 21 mini simulations. And that took about 10 minutes. We're going through all these different ones. And you could get on the website and look which ones, and you'll see a couple of them. Then I had the class nominate three. And I told them I didn't want a plurality. If we're all going to buy in, it has to be a majority. Only one of the four classes had a plurality where we had to break it down and then go down to two. But it was usually two-thirds of the class picked one of the mini simulations. And then we voted, and we chose that simulation. And then when they went into their small groups, they also had to choose one of the simulations that we hadn't done in the mini one. So they're going to do two mini simulations. I let the small group negotiate. Now, I thought this was going to take more time. It did not. Where the whole group discussion took about 10 minutes, maybe 15 in some classes. The small group negotiation, when I'm walking around getting their votes, that was quick. And I'm not sure every group was different, but they chose their own. And that was really informative to me. In the first period I did it, I was just shocked that they picked the red line in Syria. I didn't know as much as I needed to know to give them any guidance, but they thought this was really cool. So the whole group, they picked the red line in Syria. And I'll talk a little bit about it, but I just really had to do some research on my end. But the research, what just for my own curiosity, but there's enough in those mini simulations, Charlie, that really allow them to explore the questions and the nuances and complexities that I want them looking at in current events. And then these are the four, I think in this first group, there's seven groups. These are the four that they chose for their individual ones. The TikTok wasn't a surprise. The deforestation in their science class, they were learning about deforestation of the Amazon, and they picked that. Two of the groups picked that. Two of the groups picked trade policy. I have no idea why. That just turned them on for some reason. I have no idea. And of course, I'm not surprised about the covert action. The second period, they picked Ukraine, which was not a surprise to me. It's in the news. They're discussing it when they're coming in. They're asking me questions. I thought that was really great. Another group, that red line was unexpected to me. The deforestation, finally somebody agreed with me. One group finally picked, but there were three groups that picked the red line. That's what I thought. And Taiwan. I mean, I didn't see that one coming. So the third period, my period six, covert action. This one I thought was going to get picked if I gave them choices. Only one of the four classes I did it with picked this. And I think this is really interesting on covert action. And of course, again, I think our kids, I have a saying in my class, it's all about the money, honey. And I think that's why they were picking trade security and economic sanctions. And then in the last class, they picked the prisoner swap. Finally, this is the smart class that just wanted to be like their teacher. I didn't tell them ahead of time that it was mine, but they thought that was interesting. And then that was a class that there was a lot of different choice. Ukraine, the red line in Syria, and the TikTok. And no one all day had done the armed forces. So armed force, that was really interesting. And that has really been helpful in class discussions when we've talked about World War I and since I've been teaching. This is how I set it up on the mini simulations with everybody. A lot of people use Canvas in the country. So this was a 3-day project. They read together, and I'll talk about reading together. They read together the overview, the situation, and the three policy options. All of the simulations have that 3-part series. And their notes are taken in. We call it a MacBook because my name is Miss Mac. So we call it the MacBook notebook. And so they take all their notes. I will say this right now. I don't know if I'm going to say it further, but I make kids write down notes. We know that writing, the physical act of writing, increases test scores, it increases comprehension. And then when the next day, even if I direct instruction, I'm going back to those notes and revisiting those notes every 24 hours. Some schools in the country also use Avid. This is a note-taking strategy that I think it pays dividends. The three policy options they analyze after they, I didn't go part two. After they read the three additional sources, they are pulling out and taking notes and writing the title and quotes from the articles. One of the things going back to one of the strategies I do within the classroom, and I'm going to really focus on this, is you read through the whole article. You do not take notes while you're reading. And each group's going to negotiate that differently of who reads and who doesn't. But they are to read all the way through it. A lot of times it takes a lot longer to read through something if you're taking notes as you go. And you also are missing the whole point of comprehending the article. On point three, after they've read the additional sources, then they're creating T-charts, the positives and negatives of each one of the policies. And then as a group, they have to negotiate down to one. And then they write a summary statement explaining their decisions of how the positives outweigh the negatives. Now, within each one of these mini simulations, there's nuance and complexity. So the discussion here when they go to have to make that decision is rich within the small groups. The expectations and note-taking, Cohen, I said that I make kids write it down because that's what they're going to use in the general class discussion or the whole class discussion. They read, as I said, they take notes after and they read aloud. And within each group, by the way, I am pretty loose with this. Each group is going to create their own leadership, their own discussion on how they do stuff. And I'm going to go back to them. My habit is, how did you guys decide to do it? A lot of times in a lot of things where we have a leader, we give a specific role. I don't do that. I let the group itself create that. And I also talk about anybody's not pulling their weight, tell me. And so because we know what happens in small group activities. A couple kids do all the work and then they get away with not doing the assignment and not learning. And that is an expectation I set up on the first day of school that there's not going to be any social loafers. I think that's the correct psychological term that I use from their psychology class. They write down unknown words. This is really important. Also going back to the vocabulary, they negotiate, and then they're prepared for class discussion. Then this is the worksheet that I create in Google Drive. If anybody wants it, they can email me. You have your name, your teammates, the mini simulation on Canvas. If you know, you have all the kids, so they're not like divvied up by period. So I want to have which simulation I'm reading about. And then all I do is read the summary. And I really am happy with this writing skill that I'm trying to incorporate with the five sentence paragraph. I'm really tight with it. I could loosen up, but I'm talking to my English colleagues and they're saying, Lois, if you could get them to write a solid paragraph, we could take it from there. And then the mini simulation, I do the same thing with the small groups. And then when I come back to class discussions, I do not talk about the content. I talk about the collaboration. As I said, I let the students figure it out. Who is your leaders in your groups? How did your group operate? It's always different within every group. And who do you want to compliment the most? Who was really doing great work? Who had a great comment? What were the aha moments you had? So I'm really talking about the process itself. And we're still, content's still going to come in here. But then, here we go. When I talk about the content itself, the leaders will present and then they're used up. You cannot talk a second time until everybody in the class has talked. And then I ask direct questions using their notebook only. I don't allow them to open computers back up and look up stuff. They should have it in their notes. They should have textual evidence. I'm really tight with that. And I'm from the great state of Oregon, Charlie. So with computers, if I need them to come up, I either say University of Oregon is Beaver, so Beavertel, Oregon State's Beavertel. Oh my gosh, I might have to worry about myself. And then University of Oregon is Duck. So I either say Duckbill, that means the computer's this open, or Beavertel. So I use those little things. You can use it if you want to use Oregon examples. But I want in that note-taking book, the textual evidence. We talk about aha moments and then the nuance and complexity of the issues. Once we get through this class discussion, it's rich. And then we go back in and do the small ones. And then the other students are listening to what happened in the other mini simulations. The connections to the past events, to what I'm teaching at the time, are incredible. the red line in Syria, and when Assad decides to send poison his own or gas his own people, really came in handy when we talked about World War I. It was absolutely brilliant. The questions that were coming from students. One girl asked, why didn't they outlaw this? I mean, the Germans were doing this. I said, wait. I think we're all doing it there. Both sides were using gas. And I think that's correct. And boy, I hope somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. But it really brought up the nature of war and how war can be so tough. World War I was very enriched by just studying Syria. And then not to belabor it, but then I have not done this yet, but I love the story of Gary Powers. I absolutely love this story. And I do a lesson on the Cold War through the cunning use of the 1960 Olympics. And Gary Powers was being discussed. Eisenhower was denying that he was spying. And it just reminds me of Paul Whelan. And I think when I get there, it'll be really easy to connect those events. So that's the results I see. I really have enjoyed, my students have been very enriched by using these mini simulations, and they want to do another one this coming semester. We're in our next semester at this point. So that's how I use it in the classroom.
So great. Where do I sign up for your class, Lois?
Well, I'll tell you. Yeah. I'm
sorry. Yeah. Well, thank you. So we just want to take a quick moment. What have we talked about today? We talked about how global literacy is made up of knowledge, skills, and perspective. We talked about how when you're planning to teach current events, some things to think about are routine, schedule, choice, and being ready for the big one. And then we had heard Lois talk about using mini simulations. She had these small structured small group discussions so that she could promote curiosity, collaboration, and choice in her classroom. So I know the chat's been busy, so I'm going to hand things back to Rania.
Thank you so much, Charlie and Lois. I always learn so much from you. Before we finish, we definitely want to address some of the amazing questions you've all asked. And thank you for all of your great tips in the comments. Let's address a question from Susan. Susan said, I'm wondering if you teach news literacy as a separate topic or if you work it into your topics.
Why don't you go first, Lois?
Well, I'm telling you, that's a huge issue right now. I'm on the state textbook or text social studies panel for adoption of new curriculum and requirements, and that's a big one right now. So within my school, I am definitely teaching those skills, and we are teaching them right out of the gate. But I think that I don't spend a lot of time on the front end of teaching them. I have a structure, but really you have to get into mini simulations and use it. And that's when you use it, you're going to tease out what skills that you want the kids to have. I don't think I'm as successful, frankly, as I'd like to be. I'm still learning how to do that. And I'm learning from other people around the state. I have a colleague that put together a great lesson on it. I'm going to use his lesson next year because I don't think mine is very good. But I think you've hit on something extremely important. Yeah. Charlie, do you know the resources that are best for that? I know that Bunk, that Annie Evans and Ed Ayers, mm-hmm. they are another great resource when it comes to that kind of media literacy.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the work. That the Digital Inquiry Group, they used to be known as Stanford History Education Group.
Oh,
they have a curriculum called Civic Online Reasoning. And it's actually based on some research of a professor from University of Washington, Vancouver, which is almost in Oregon, and right across the river from Portland, isn't it?
And about 6 hours from me.
From you, yeah. Anyway. Great thinking, great resources, you know, but I think to Susan's question, you know, maybe you do a little on the front end to get some vocabulary, get a couple of basic concepts down, but it's the kind of thing you have to keep coming back to over the course of the year as you get particular use cases to steer students through. They're so deep into it, and they think they know so much about consuming media that if they actually aren't doing a perfect job of it, you have to reinforce it over and over again.
But I think we're in this time where all of us teachers are learning how to do it better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, this is, you know, in my time of teaching, you know, it's changed completely. And, you know, TikTok hadn't even taken off yet. Now you're getting new challenges every day.
Charlie, this is what I was running things on, a mimeograph my first year.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. We have some more questions to address. And if you have questions, make sure to throw them in the Q&A tab, question tab at the top. We have a question from Jen. Jen asks, how do you promote the quiet learner who prefers to think carefully and write out their thoughts?
Well, I'll tell you that. I think you've hit on something extremely interesting with the quiet learner, because a lot of times the quiet learner is ignored, especially when early in my career, you're handling discipline problems that are the loudest kid in the room. So, but I really think that the quiet learner does best in that small group setting. I am a real believer in it, because it gives them time to process and be quiet. And then as a teacher, you're going in and pulling them aside and saying, hey, I saw you thinking, can you talk to me one-on-one? So I think it's a process over time. I'm identifying those kids right out of the gate and then trying to make sure. I still think that having that warm classroom that allows you to risk, that allows you to ask questions, it's okay. Oftentimes I say, hey, that's a great wrong answer. Let's keep going, because you're going to get us on the right one. And just risking and making it safe to risk. I think that will get to the quiet learner as the small group. Yeah. And one person in the chat said, hey, wait time. Yeah, I'm great with wait time. So, and another thing with teachers, I'm doing too much talking, but within the classroom, it's not just wait time. How much of your percentage are you talking versus your students? And what I loved about this mini simulations is that they're doing more talking than I am.
Yeah.
And as you know, Charlie, you and I are the same. We love the sound of our own voice. But we want to hear the voice of our students.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a real adjustment around the office. I don't have a captive audience anymore. I think absolutely. It's an important question. And yeah, I think, you know, anything you can do to push those students to, you know, build the confidence and find the setting where they can speak up. Don't let them retreat and kind of opt out completely. If that's something you feel is important, and you know, I certainly do, of like getting some practice speaking. Doesn't have to be your favorite. Doesn't have to be all the time, but you know, building that support for them for sure.
Great, thank you. Now we have time for one more question, and I think this one will relate to a lot of people might be feeling it this year. This is from Amanda, who says, I teach seniors in a government class and I will be teaching government again come September. Any advice for new, not tenured teachers to approach the election year and related to news?
I can try that. Amanda, I on the first day of school this year, I got AP Gov. So I had been teaching, I know, so it doesn't matter if you're if you're seasoned or not seasoned. A new subject area is so hard to teach. So I commend you as a young teacher doing it, because I felt like a first-year teacher this year. So I'm new, and I'm leaning on people around the country that are really good. The National Constitution Center has great lessons, and Sphere out of the Cato Institution has rules for civic behavior. And I'll tell you, I opened with that this year. I had gone to a Cato event. I thought it was absolutely fabulous. I cannot say enough about their civic discussion and how you discuss things. Here's the one thing that I thought was interesting, is that kids not talking about it, being polite is not civic behavior. That one kind of really, I understood that I needed to get them talking. And I think this generation, my generation, I'm in high school during Watergate. We are talking it. This, I asked my students about 2 months ago, my AP Gov kids. So these are real bright kids. What are you doing with controversial subjects? And they said they avoid them. And that is not what we want. We want them discussing controversial stuff. So I would push into those resources. Charlie, do you know other resources?
I think you named some great ones. I am conscious of the time. Make sure. No, not at all. We're having a great conversation. So thrilled you all are here. I want to let Rania wrap us up.
And this is maybe speaking to what Lois was saying. She asked, any more resources? Well, CFR Education is here for you, from the Council on Foreign Relations. Stay connected with us by following CFR Education on X, formerly Twitter, or Facebook, and signing up to receive free teaching and learning resources straight to your inbox. And again, feel free to send us an email, follow us on Twitter, reach out to us. We want to bring those global affairs issues to your classroom. Thank you so much again for attending, and we really appreciate you coming in and learning more about teaching current events. We really learned a lot from you as well. All right, everybody, have a wonderful day, and thank you again.
Thanks so much, everyone. Have a great day.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.